Hello, and welcome to the latest recording of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth area talking newspaper. Today is Friday the 8th of March, and we are the Green Team. My name is Gwen Wedden, and I'm joined by the other members of our team, Graham, Lynn, Chris, and Mike. Do you remember the old proverb, in like a lion and out like a lamb? Well, the wind has obviously taken its responsibilities to heart because it's been blowing a hoolie for several days now. Hopefully, the out like a lamb part will duly follow. But cold and blustery or not, there are lots of encouraging signs that spring is just around the corner. The Dawlish to Tynmouth Road has lots of miniature daffodils growing along its verges, and catkins are bursting out on the trees too. Today is also International Women's Day, so if you know any international women, wish them all the best. And now on to our first article.
Hello, it's Chris here. My first article headline is Spring Opening for Dawlish MIU. Hopes are high that Dawlish Hospital's Minor Injuries Unit could be reopened by spring. It is understood that staff have now been recruited to run the facility, which has been closed for more than 4 years. NHS bosses are due to update Dawlish town councillors last night on the latest position for the unit, which has been the subject of a fierce campaign to be reopened. Plans are thought to be currently underway to organise the unit's reopening, and the new staff have been at Barton Hill Hospital. It is understood it could be open within weeks, possibly on a Monday to Friday basis. Mayor Councillor Rosie Dawson said they'd been told the unit is still planned for reopening. She said someone from the NHS Trust is coming to update the town council, so hopefully we will have a date or something concrete soon. In December, MP Anne-Marie Morris was given assurances the facility would reopen as a nurse had been appointed. The Friends of Dawlish Hospital launched a campaign last year to bring back Dawlish MIU, which attracted almost 200 responses. Many gave testimony about the struggles to access appropriate healthcare since the unit closed. Patients who have needed services recently say the closure impacts on Newton Abbott's urgent treatment centre, which is often overwhelmed. One patient recounted the last time they visited Newton Abbott, there were a lot of people from Dawlish in the waiting room. In November, the Friends said they'd been made aware of rumours being circulated that the unit would be reopening. A spokesman said at the time, it should be noted that no dates were given for that opening. We have heard similar comments in the past, and these have come to nothing. Before Christmas, a spokesperson for Torbay and South Devon NHS Foundation Trust said, "We remain committed to reopening Dawlish MIU. We've had a recent successful round of recruitment and are working through the necessary processes. At this time, we are not in a position to offer a reopening date, but we will inform the local community once we know when that is."
Hello, I'm Graham, and the first headline today is Battle Continues for Historic Hospital. The battle to save Tynmouth Hospital took another turn as campaigners continued their committed bid to keep it open. Tynbridge Council decided to have one last go at urging the Health Secretary, Victoria Atkins, to look again at NHS Devon's decision to move its services elsewhere. The Health Service says the town will be better served by the new hub, but campaigners believe the hospital's role is still vital. It was the first NHS hospital to be built after the Second World War, replacing a building which was bombed. The NHS Devon Clinical Commissioning Group decided in December 2020 to move its services to other locations in Tynmouth and Dawlish. any further decisions about what to do with the hospital itself would rest with its owners, the Torbay and South Devon NHS Foundation Trust. Tunbridge Chairman, Councillor Chris Clarence, said the council needed to act quickly after a Devon County Council committee voted in January not to lobby the minister of half of Tynmouth. He said there is still a clear need for the hospital. He added, the NHS says its model of care is working efficiently. If it was, there wouldn't be queues of ambulances lined up on a daily basis outside Torquay's accident and emergency department. If any laypersons can see that there are insufficient inpatient beds, why can't our trust see it too? Councillor Clarence disputed reports that the fabric of the building is in poor condition with water coming in. He said, I don't buy into the argument that it is all doom and gloom about the state of the building. We can't afford to wait any longer. This is the final roll of the dice. Councillor Rosie Dawson said the hospital had been used as a red zone assessment centre during the pandemic and may be needed again. She said, if this is the last action we can take to try and save Tynmouth Hospital, then we must take it. But Councillor Joan Atkins warned that if the hospital was saved, the NHS had no stomach to go on running it. She said, I believe firmly that primary care should be available, but I don't believe the hospital is the place for it to be. I think we're barking up the wrong tree. Campaigners to save the hospital were out in force again at Ford House last week and said they were euphoric at the councillor's decision. After the meeting, council leader Martin Wrigley told the Mid Devon Advertiser, we voted to refer the decision back to the Secretary of State. There is a lot of work to do to get the evidence together, and we have to add to the work, which was already done by Devon County Council. But we will make sure we will put the referral in as soon as we can. Following the meeting, NHS Devon stressed that it did not have a plan to shut down the hospital, but does plan to relocate its services. And I'm afraid there's a bit of a rustle here because I've got two separate photographs of quite a lot of people trying to campaign to save Tynmouth Hospital.
Hundreds turn out for Austin's 100th birthday and celebrations as the Newton Abbott store reaches its century. Hundreds gathered outside Newton Abbott's historic independent department store to celebrate its milestone of 100 years of trading. Described as the beating heart of the town, Austin's first opened its doors on March 1, 1924, and it's now the largest independently owned retailer in the Southwest. Fast forward a century and crowds queued eagerly around the block for opening time and a host of special events to mark the occasion. David Austin, the third generation of the family to run the retail empire, cut a ribbon to start the celebrations off with Mayor of Newton Abbott, Councillor David Courtney Walker, and Town Crier Nigel Kenenson, heralding the event. David Austin said he's always mindful of the importance his business plays within the community. We are only custodians, and Austin's is important to the community, he said. I was totally overwhelmed at the amount of people who turned out so early on a wet and cold day to celebrate with us. The most important thing about any business is especially the people within the business, and we are lucky to have great people working for us and working with us.
We all work very well together and we're very much a family business. The store, which comprises five separate shops clustered around the historic St. Leonard's Tower in the heart of the town, is a much-loved and increasingly rare asset. Customers are attracted from across the region. Newton Abbott Town Development Manager Sally Henley was on hand to help with the celebrations. She said, "Having Austin's in town is of immense value to Newtonians, not only in terms of the business it generates and the draw it provides to other business owners who want to operate nearby, but emotionally it's important too. In an ever-changing world, Austin's has been a constant for the past century and still prides itself on the first-class customer service. But David and his team haven't let time stand still. They understand the current market challenges and have risen to meet them with a strong online presence and competitive pricing. There are towns up and down the length of Britain that would give their eye teeth for an Austin's, and many who mourn the loss of their own department stores. We're simply thrilled that our town centre still boasts such a wonderful treasure, and as a town development manager I will continue to work with David Austin and the community that loves his store to do our very best so that in 2124 they can celebrate 200 years of trading." And there's some wonderful photos that accompany this large article in the paper, with a queue that was forming and a crowd all around the square in front of the main Austin's building. And it looks like over 100, maybe 150, 200 people, I'm not sure. And the mayor's there with a large pair of scissors and about to cut the ribbon. And a lovely, beautiful Austin's blue flag flying on the top of St. Leonard's Tower. What a wonderful celebration.
Rock choir gig hits right note with singers. Singers from Dawlish Rock Choir joined fellow vocalists at a sellout show in Torquay. The National Rock Choir You're the Voice tour was at the Princess Theatre for the fifth date of a national tour of the choir, the largest contemporary rock choir in the world. The show was led by the creator of Rock Choir, Carolyn Redman Lusher, along with Southwest Rock Choir leaders. The audience was largely made up of Rock Choir members, and it was a chance for them to come together with a larger number of singers from the Rock Choir from all over the Southwest. Described as a high-energy, joyous pop concert, the event saw the audience interacting with the songs and up on their feet dancing. Despite breaking her ankle a month ago, there was no holding back Caroline, who was also joined by the Southwest Rock Choir leaders. They all took to the stage with solo numbers. The shows have been gaining more and more attention, with demand building to make tickets for the dates available to the wider general public. Rock Choir has now made future shows available for everyone, subject to ticket availability. Choir member Judy Jackman said, "What an amazing, inspiring and joyous evening. So much fun singing together with all our fellow Rockies. When I joined Rock Choir 2 years ago, I didn't realise how much it would change my life after a very difficult time." And there is a very joyous photograph of standing on the stage, looking out at the audience, all of them bright, happy smiles on their faces, and the leaders turning to the photographer.
Centre will have to close unless funding is found. Volunteer trustees running Tynmouth's Kingsway Meadows Centre say it will have to close in April unless drastic funding can be secured. Following last week's revelation that the community centre, which is run by the Kingsway Residents Association, is to shut, the trustees have explained that despite desperate efforts to find funding, the centre is effectively no longer financially viable. A spokesman for the trustees said, "Tough financial conditions, including the cost of living crisis, have taken its toll on the centre, which now finds itself in a critical position. About £30,000 is needed to keep the wheels in motion just until the end of the year." Although there have been crowdfunding options, discussions with councils, and appeals to local businesses, the amount needed is still dramatically short of the target. But they have promised to work hard to investigate any beacon of hope or funding avenue until time and funds run out, and have launched an urgent appeal to help save them in their hour of need. The spokesperson said, "The closure of the KRA will be a crucial loss to many and will be sorely missed, and the decision to close has not been an easy one to accept or make. However, ultimately the charity has been unable to secure the necessary funding to cover the £60,000 operating costs, meaning it is no longer financially viable. Previously, the charity has been supported by grants from organisations such as Children in Need, the National Lottery and the People's Health Trust, as well as numerous smaller local grants, councillor funding and personal donations. Competition for grants is much harder now and the money available is less, but with increasing applications. Redundancy notices have been issued to 2 paid staff, and groups and clubs have been cancelled." The spokesman explained, "In the coming weeks, the trustees will work diligently to ensure a smooth transition and to fulfil any remaining obligations. The trustees are determined this process will be dignified, transparent and planned, so that all users, the Town Council and Kingsway residents are fully appraised of what is happening. While the closure of such a fantastic community asset brings an overwhelming sense of sadness, it's also essential to recognise the positive times and the experiences it has brought residents over the years, to be remembered as a place of warmth and togetherness that the staff have so caringly provided. The trustees sincerely hope that despite the sad demise of the Kingsway Residents Association, there will be the opportunity for other initiatives and groups to form and begin to fill the void that will inevitably be felt with the loss of such a well-loved community space. Anyone able to help with the funding mission is asked to call 01626 77 5639, leaving names and contact details."
Bridge petition heads to the 500 mark. Almost 500 people have now signed a petition demanding a much-loved and much-used Dawlish footbridge is replaced. The Manor Gardens footbridge has turned into a real bone of contention for residents after it was removed by Teignbridge Council for safety reasons. Mayor Councillor Rosie Dawson started the petition calling for its reinstatement due to its importance. Removal of the bridge has meant a long detour for users of the park, which is popular with walkers, dog owners, and is home to the town's state-of-the-art children's play park. Councillor Dawson has now said she's met with officers from Teignbridge Council since launching the petition. She explained, "We agreed they would get more specific costings so we can see what we need to find to install a new bridge. It cannot be replaced with a wooden bridge as construction guidelines have changed considerably in the last 10 years, meaning that unfortunately cheaper options are out. It's really clear from the petition so far that locals are very much in support of replacement, and that's great in order to evidence the strength of feeling, especially given predicted costs and the challenges of them. The wooden bridge has been deemed unsafe following an inspection by Teignbridge Council engineers in 2023, which was carried out after a tree fell and caused damage to the bridge. It has been out of action and closed to the public for a year due to these safety concerns, as it had been discovered there was also damage to the structure supporting it underneath. But the recent total removal of the old bridge was condemned as a travesty by park users. Teignbridge Council said, following an inspection, engineers found it to be unsafe and definitely coming to the end of its lifespan, so it needed to be removed. The council is currently reviewing the viability of replacement options. The petition states that while it is not a recognised right of way, given its historical use, it was felt Teignbridge Council has a responsibility and as such needs to maintain, protect and preserve it.
Project to restore Country Park in full swing. The Restoring Stover Park project, which aims to create a better place for people, wildlife and heritage, has begun in earnest this week, as contractors prepare to begin dredging the lake. The aim is to improve the water quality and enhance habitats for wildlife. The silt from the bottom of the lake will be pumped into bags and then put in the recently felled area, where it will be left to dewater. Once the silt is dry, it will be spread and mixed with soil and replanted with native tree species. The Restoring Stover project has been made possible by funding from National Lottery Heritage Fund, National Highways, Devon County Council, Devon Remembers, Bovey Tracy Town Council, Kingstainton Towns Council and the Friends of Stover Park.
Every little helps community larder. Community conscious shoppers at Tesco have donated 600 kilograms of supplies in 2 days to help a desperate Teignmouth food bank. Staff at the Kingstainton store stepped in to arrange a special 2-day collection point after coming to the rescue of Teignmouth community larder. Larder volunteers contacted the supermarket after an upsurge in demand for basic provisions, such as long-life food, tinned or jarred food, and dried pasta. So the store arranged a special 2-day collection. Jackie Jackson, organiser and secretary at Teignmouth Community Larder, said, "We operate on grants and donations, and rising food costs and economic challenges such as we have experienced recently affect our ability to provide for those in need. The cost of living increases have tipped them over the economic cliff. When you add to this benefit cuts, redundancies and personal circumstances, people are forced into using food banks such as ours. The cost of food itself has risen during the past year, compounding the other difficulties. Tesco understands all of this, and the response to the store collection was overwhelming. So many generous customers participated. Some donated more than one item, and the collection grew. The impact was immense, nearly 600 kilos of food poured in, with a lifeline for families relying on the community larder. This food will support the larder and its users for weeks and enable additional time for other funding to be found to continue our work. The food bank provides people in need with basic food packs, which can be collected from Bitten House on Wednesday mornings or delivered to someone's home. Janet Parker, Tesco Community Champion, said, "The food bank contacted us to say they were really low on food and asked if we could help. The increase in need has been mainly due to the increase in local people using the food bank and knowing how hard the cost of living crisis is hitting so many people. We organised the collection as quickly as we could. Our customers were asked to donate an item of food, mainly under £1, which proved very popular, with so many people giving generously. the food bank's wonderful volunteers also swung into action by attending the store, arranging the collection and storing of the food, and they even found time to talk with customers about the amazing work they do for the community.
Rescue charity is feline fine after a donation. A Devon care home has made a generous donation to a cat rescue charity after taking in two senior felines. Sefton Hall in Dawlish adopted Indy, aged about 8, and 17-year-old Felix last summer from Hector's House Cat Rescue, a Torbay-based charity which helps cats in need throughout Devon. Felix was badly injured after being hit by a car, and after being a little shy to start off with, the pair have now fully settled into the home and are a very big hit with the residents. Alison Adair from Sefton Hall presented the charity's founder, Zara Oldfield, with a cheque for £1,080. The money was raised from the home's summer fete and raffles, along with donations from Sefton Hall's community cafe and residents. Zara said, "The care home here at Sefton Hall is fantastic. When Felix came to live here, he was not in a good way, so it's so great to see how well he has done in such a short time. I got into cat rescue when my cat went missing 6 years ago, and since January of this year we've taken in 60 cats. Some have wandered off from their homes, others are stolen or taken in as strays and then left behind when the family moves or the person feeding them goes into hospital or into care." She continued, "If you do have a cat, it's very important to have it neutered and microchipped to keep it safe. And if you know anyone who is feeding a stray cat, please get in touch with our charity. Sometimes cats go missing for years before being reunited with their owners." Zara added that the donation from Sefton Hall would be used to help the charity move away from her home and into a dedicated premises in Torquay. To find out more about adopting a cat or to donate money to the charity, visit www.hectorshousecatsrescue.co.uk, and the Hector's House part is all one word, no dots and no gaps in it. And there's a lovely photograph of a member of staff presenting a very large cheque to Zara, who's holding a rather soft and fluffy white and black cat who looks extremely comfortable.
Chef Kane's champions local food at this year's Devon County Show. One of the UK's most esteemed and celebrated chefs has been announced as president for the 2024 Devon County Show. Michael Kane's MBE is known for his culinary prowess and innovative approach, and has proven himself a visionary hotelier, a dedicated patron and fundraiser for national and local charities. He is also a devoted advocate of farming and food in Devon, a passion that will be reflected in all his plans as this year's show. "Food and farming are, of course, the very heart of the Devon County Show," said Michael. The two are inextricably linked, as there can be no food future without farming. Farmers are the caretakers of the land and providers of our regional larders. Chefs are storytellers, as are our suppliers, and they connect this unique tapestry of our woven landscape to the very communities that live, work and thrive within this wonderful county of Devon. We must therefore protect and champion our indigenous and heritage breeds, celebrate our biodiversity, protect our ancient woodlands, orchards, wetlands and grasslands, and as stewards of the countryside, embrace the need for the adoption of regenerative farming techniques, a need that becomes even more urgent as we face a climate emergency. It's by working together at events such as the Devon County Show, where communities with a truly diverse audience come together and are primed for getting the conversation started and forging a partnership that will help create a better future for Devon food and farming. Devon can be proud as having one of the finest larders in the UK, and this year's 3-day show will certainly showcase that fact. There will be winners of the Southwest Chef of the Year, supported by students from Michael Caine's Academy at Exeter College, who will be performing cooking demonstrations throughout the duration of the show. Devon County Show 2024 takes place at West Point in Exeter from May the 16th to May the 18th. Early bird tickets are now on sale, available at devoncountyshow.co.uk.
Start on storm hit prom repairs. Work has started on repairs to Tynmouth's prom following damage caused by Storm Ciarán last November. Contractors have moved on site to carry out the repairs along the seafront. Work to repair damaged walls, flower beds and paving slabs started on Monday and is scheduled to be completed before the Easter holidays. Tunbridge Council has warned the timescale for the work is dependent on the weather. A spokesman said businesses along the seafront have been notified and the contractors will do everything possible to minimise disruption. Councillor Robert Phipps said he was pleased to see the rebuilding work had started. Some residents have raised concerns that the repair work needed to be strong enough to withstand any further storms. And I can agree with that, having a photograph in front of me here, quite a drastic one of a wall that has totally collapsed. And in fact, I've experienced the actual site itself when I walk past it. So I agree with those residents.
Rare opportunity for classical music lovers. The main work in Dawlish Choral Society's concert in St Gregory's Church later this month will be Beethoven's oratorio, Christ on the Mount of Olives. The abridged performance, which takes place on the evening of Tuesday, March the 19th, will provide a rare opportunity for music lovers to hear one of Beethoven's most original and dramatic works. Although relatively unknown in comparison with his symphonies and concertos, the work contains some of Beethoven's most inspired and original music. The lead role for the performance will be taken by Jonathan Waterworth, a well-known soloist in South Devon who has appeared in Dawlish on several occasions. Another soloist known in Dawlish audiences is Carmen Lasoc, who was particularly associated with the production from the Dawlish Arts Festival a year ago. For this performance, she will be singing the part of the angel. The disciple Peter will be sung by Michael Smith, who makes a welcome return to Dawlish after recent operatic concerts in Exeter and Honiton. The three singers will be accompanied by organist John Dracy and a small instrumental ensemble led by violinist Adrian Jansen. By way of contrast, the first half of the concert will consist of a medley of instrumental and vocal short pieces from the 17th and 18th centuries, for which the Society is delighted to welcome back Anne Dracy, soprano, and James Bellamy, baritone, as soloists. Tickets for the performance at 7:30, starting at 7:30, are priced at £9 in advance from the Dawlish Bookshop on Queen Street, or £10 on the door. And accompanied children are admitted free. There will be refreshments, and these will be served with donations in aid of Rowcroft Hospice.
Moving on to the obituaries, we start with Marilyn Lynn Ellard, passed away peacefully on the 24th of February, aged 86. The funeral service is on Monday, the 18th of March, at 2:30 p.m. at Torquay Crematorium. Details from Jay Knapmans in Tynmouth. Emma Ford passed away peacefully at home on the 1st of February. The funeral service to take place on Friday the 15th of March in St Gregory's Church, Dawlish at 11:45 a.m. And details from J.H. Way Funeral Service. Susie Hamilton passed away peacefully at home whilst sleeping on the 21st of February, aged 94. Susie lived her whole life in and around the Starcross area, where she was at her happiest. Her funeral service will be taking place at St Paul's Church, Starcross, on Wednesday, the 13th of March at 10:30 a.m. Details from Crewe and Son Funeral Directors in Tower Street, Exmouth. Sue Mayhew passed away on the 23rd of February, and her funeral service will take place in St Gregory's Church, Dawlish, on Friday, the 22nd of March at 11:30 a.m. Details from Dawlish Funeral Care. And Margaret Mary Pendle passed away peacefully on the 23rd of February, aged 87. The funeral service will take place in St Peter's Chapel, Exeter and Devon Crematorium on Thursday, the 14th of March at 12:30 p.m. Details from Dawlish Funeral Care. And Edith Evelyn Edworthy Sanders passed away peacefully on the 27th of February, aged 102. Her funeral service is on Tuesday, the 26th of March at 11:30 a.m. at Torquay Crematorium. And details from Oliver J. Knapman in Tynmouth. And now a few notable events. On Monday, the 18th of March, the Spa Shop in Starcross is reopening. Tuesday, the 19th of March, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Otter Nurseries. Also on the 19th of March, Exminster Pensioners Club are having an outing to Oakham Treasures, and they're leaving at 9:30. Thursday, the 21st of March, Exminster Local History Group meet in the Methodist Church Hall at 7 p.m. for a talk by Claire Maudling on the rebuilding of Exeter after the Blitz. And the 22nd and 23rd of March, the Cockwood Sea Shanty Festival. Meet up and sing at the Atmospheric Inn in Starcross at 8 p.m. And there will be further events all over that weekend. And if you wish to go on the Dawlish Community Transport excursions, the number to ring is 01626 888777.
My next article is from the Herald Express. Abnormal levels of radioactive gas sees prisoners relocated. Around 100 prisoners have been moved from Dartmoor Prison due to higher than normal levels of radon. The prison service has described the move as precautionary, and no one has reported falling ill. Radon is a naturally occurring radioactive gas and one of the leading causes of lung cancer. It is produced by natural radioactive decay of uranium, and concentrations are higher indoors and in areas with little ventilation. It is understood some prisoners were moved out before Christmas, and again some moved in January. Cells in two of the 120-year-old prisoners' wing have been closed, and operational capacity has been reduced by 106. A prison service spokesperson said a number of prisoners have been relocated as a precautionary measure after routine testing revealed higher than normal levels of radon. This is a temporary measure, while working to permanently reduce radon levels is completed, and there are no safety implications to staff or prisoners who remain on site. In the 3 months to late January, the operational capacity at HMP Dartmoor was lowered from 689 to 583. While radon is common in many parts of the UK, prolonged or concentrated exposure can lead to severe illness, so there is a legal requirement for periodic testing. Prisoners were moved to ensure they're not exposed to a prolonged period of gas. HMP Dartmoor has been monitoring the situation for a number of years. It has used fans and ventilation to reduce detectable levels of radon, and reduced access to some areas has been restricted.
Bid to keep Stone Quarry open is the next title of my item, and this too is taken from the Herald Express. Dartmoor's last active stone quarry could be given a longer lease of life if the Moors Planning Authority gives the green light. The operator of Yenadon Quarry at Dooseland originally had permission to quarry stone until the end of 2026, by which time the land would have had to be restored. But now Yenadon Stone wants to carry on quarrying until May 2042. The company says demand for Yenadon Stone cannot be met if the earlier deadline is maintained, because of limits on the amount of stone that can be quarried each year, as well as a cap on the number of lorries going to and from the site. The quarry produces stone for walling and landscaping, and 26 jobs would be lost if it closes. The report says demand for Yenadon stone can't be met in any other way. And, it adds, there is a very strong public interest in maintaining the distinctive character and appearance of the built environment on Dartmoor, as well as continuing the tradition of small-scale stone quarrying. Yenadon has been part of Dartmoor's cultural heritage for over 100 years, and is the only remaining operational quarry supplying local slate stone within the boundary of the national park. Yenadon Stone has made, and continues to make, a significant contribution to the character and appearance of the built environment, and there is a strong public interest in it continuing to do so.
And staying with the Herald Express, leak detectors rolled out. South West Water is sending leak detection devices to over 6,000 households in an effort to tackle leaks. The water company will distribute the leak bots to customers in Devon and Cornwall this month as part of a trial. It will run for 6 months and, if successful, could be rolled out more widely. Leak bots are smart devices which help identify internal leaks within properties. It can be clipped onto a water pipe near the internal stop tap and detect if there is a constant flow of water within the property, providing an instant alert to the customer's smartphone. If a leak is detected and customers are unable to fix it, LeakBot can send out an engineer to undertake the repair free of charge. David Harris from South West Water's Drought and Resilience Director said, "We're always looking at new and innovative ways of reducing leakage across the region, alongside more traditional methods. With around 30% of leaks now found on customers' properties, we really need the help of our customers. LeakBot will enable customers to detect leaks so that they can be fixed quickly. We're very excited to see the impact that LeakBot will have."
This article is from Dawlish Ladies Guild and it's written by Barbara Roberts. Much to their surprise, members were welcomed at the door by a lady in full 16th century Elizabethan dress. This was the Lady Catherine, otherwise our guest speaker for the afternoon, Rosemary Griggs. After a career in the civil service, followed by a spell of globe-trotting with her husband, Rosemary became a volunteer at Compton Castle and got involved with making a Tudor costume. She became fascinated with the complexity of the garments. From this beginning, Rosemary developed a fascination not only with Tudor costume, but in one particular aristocrat, the Lady Catherine Champernowne. Twice married, the mother of Sir Walter Raleigh and Sir Humphrey Gilbert. Rosemary started dressing in costume during her volunteering duties and giving talks about Tudor dress. Now she arrives at venues already in costume and greets people using the archaic English of the 16th century. She does, however, revert to modern English as she describes and shows the many and varied items which together constitute one Tudor dress of a lady, such as a shift, a full skirt, an outer skirt, elaborate separate sleeves, a underpinnings and accessories, all supported by a system of hoops known as a farthingale. Guild members concluded that although the dress looked beautiful, it must have been very uncomfortable and heavy to wear. Our chairman Jill thanked Lady Catherine for honouring the Guild with her presence and for Rosemary for her fascinating talk. Our secretary Maggie reported that the drama group had concluded their panto season and been able to donate £95 to the Strand Centre, and that Cancer Research had thanked the Guild for our recent donation. The Dawlish Guild meets on the second Thursday of the month at 2 p.m. in the Riverside Centre, Brook Street. Visitors and potential new members will be made most welcome. Membership is now £17 per annum.
Dawlish win on difference after shock. Dawlish Indoor Bowls Club this season hosted the Whitehead Trophy, the Area Interclub Tournament. 10 teams participated from this part of Devon, and on a dramatic final day, the Dawlish Marina A secured victory, in no small part owing to the Abrook Park B team's victory over Abrook Park A. Dawlish Marina had already won their final game on the same day. This meant that both teams had won the same number of games. However, because of their superior shots difference, Dawlish Marine A won overall by a margin of 57 shots. Peter Hayes, publicity officer, commented, "It was a hard-fought competition throughout the season. Our teams won 8 out of 9 matches and were the model of consistency, building an important shots difference throughout the season. We never imagined that an opponent's B victory over their A squad would be the clincher. That's what makes the game of bowls so fascinating."
And now another article from the Herald Express, from the Health and Lifestyle page. Stay sharp and fight dementia. 1 in 3 of us will develop dementia, and many people don't think of it as a deadly disease, but because our brain governs vital functions, such as our ability to breathe and swallow, it is now the most common cause of death in the UK. Some loss of brain power is inevitable as we age, particularly around the memory and problem solving. Studies show it's become more difficult to learn something new as we get older, but there is a lot we can do to stall this cognitive decline. Exercise, getting enough sleep, and doing puzzles are proven ways to put the brakes on the slowdown and to maximise our brain power. It's also important to get on top of other health problems: high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, obesity, and osteoarthritis have all been linked to an increased chance of getting dementia. Being apple-shaped and carrying extra weight around your middle is also risky, with a study in the UK women finding that those with central obesity had 39% higher risk of dementia than those of a healthy weight. So, if you find yourself struggling to remember names, lose the thread of a conversation, or forget where you've put those keys, these mind games will help you to keep sharp. The first thing to think about is brush up. Analysis of 47 studies identified a 23% increase in cognitive decline in adults with poor dental health. Post-mortem tests confirm that one of the bacteria common in gum disease migrates from the mouth to the brain, where it releases toxic enzymes and destroys nerve cells, which cause the memory loss. So to reduce your risk, brush twice a day, use interdental brushes or floss, and have regular dental checks. The pen is mighty. Take time to write letters by hand. This generates more brain activity than using a computer, one study says. And researchers discovered that writing by hand increases the connectivity across regions of the brain, which are crucial for memory and encoding new information. Walk on the wild side. A study of more than 78,000 UK adults find that clocking up at least 9,000 steps a day halves the risk of dementia. But for two-thirds of these steps, you have to stride out briskly, not just meandering around the shops, I'm afraid. Also, Nordic walking, which involves using poles to maximise upper body movement, is also of benefit. Tea time. Playing 18 holes of golf produces immediate improvements in attention and processing speeds in over 65s, cognition tests have shown. And there's a Japanese study found that regular golfers were 37% more likely to develop dementia. And a trial in 106 adults aged 65 and older found that golf training for just 90 to 120 minutes a week led to significant improvements in logical memories in just 24 weeks. Planting an idea, just a few more to go. Some studies suggest vegetarians are at lower risk of dementia, but that the evidence is not really clear. However, the Mediterranean diet, eating patterns, so high in fruit and vegetables, low in red meat and saturated fats and refined carbohydrates, do protect against cognitive decline. B12. The vitamin B12, a number of studies have shown that shortfalls of this vitamin do increase the risk of Alzheimer's and dementia. So people who have been diagnosed with this form of dementia have lower than average levels of this vitamin in their blood. Vitamin 12 is found in fish, meat, poultry, eggs and dairy products. So again, vegans and vegetarians are at risk of this deficiency, as only non-animal sources of B12 are found in some breakfast cereals. Here and now, have a hearing check. Around 2 in 5 people over the age of 50 have some degree of hearing loss, and studies show that mild impairment doubles the risk of developing dementia, while severe hearing loss is associated with a 5-fold increase. It's not clear why yet, but the good news is that studies also suggest that addressing this hearing issue and using hearing aids if needed will reduce your rate of cognitive decline. Fat chance. Make sure oily fish is on the menu and take an omega-3 supplement. Analysis of 48 studies involving more than 103,000 people found that good dietary intakes of omega-3 reduce the risk of dementia or cognitive decline by at least 20%. The NHS advises eating at least 140-gram portion of oily fish a week. And finally, ginkgo. Studies have found no evidence that the herbal supplement ginkgo biloba will reduce the risk of getting dementia, but it does appear to improve the symptoms of people who are already showing signs of mild dementia. So a systematic review of the latest studies say doses of at least 200 milligrams a day for at least 5 months were needed for any potential benefit. And dementia is quite a scary subject for people, so hopefully there's some things to take and think about from that article.
200 years of saving lives at sea. The RNLI volunteers from Tynmouth took part in a service of praise and blessing of the lifeboat fleet, which again took place in Brixham this last week to mark the 200th anniversary of the Royal National Lifeboat Institution. 6 lifeboats with crews from Tynmouth, Exmouth, Torbay, Brixham, the Dart and Salcombe gathered offshore at Bury Head on Sunday before arriving in convoy along Brixham Breakwater. Helen Lovell-Smith, the Fisherman's Mission Area Officer for Devon, conducted the special service in front of a crowd of RNLI volunteers, their friends and family members, as well as many other supporters. The flotilla of lifeboats was described as a fantastic spectacle, and Tynmouth's RNLI volunteers said it was an honour to be part of the special day. On the day the charity turned 200, the RNLI revealed its volunteer lifeboat crews and lifeguards across the southwest have saved over 16,000 lives during the 2 centuries of life-saving. Since the charity was founded in 1824, its volunteer crews in Devon, Cornwall, Somerset, West Dorset and the Channel Islands have launched the lifeboat over nearly 56,000 times, saving nearly 15,000 lives. Meanwhile, RNLI lifeguards across the region, who became part of the charity's life-saving service in 2001, have responded to over 176,000 incidents, saving over 1,000 lives. In total, across the UK and Ireland, 146,452 lives have been saved by the RNLI. This equates to an average of 2 lives saved every day for 200 years. And there's some stunning photographs of volunteer crews, the boats motoring through the water in convoy and flotilla. It was fortunately a very sunny day that day, and everybody looks very stunning in their uniforms and very proud of their boats.
Dawlish Club recognised in national awards. Dawlish Women Walking Football Club has been recognised for its involvement in the community by the Walking Football Association. The team received a highly recommended mention in the WFA Grassroots Awards 2023. They were impressed with the team's work in female cohesion for the kick and cake sessions. This FA Just Play initiative has been running for nearly a year. It is for women aged over 50 who want to try something different or return to football in a more gentle environment. Team manager Kirsten Piber said, "We are all thrilled to receive this acknowledgement from the Walking Football Association. Kick and cake is a really fun hour of exercise. And of course, we always finish with tea and cake. Please come along and give it a go. The sessions are at the Astro Pitch on Sandy Lane every other Sunday at 10:30 a.m, costing just £2. And there is a photograph here of some ladies who've taken part in a game by the looks of it. And this caption sums it up perfectly, I think. It says, "Dawlish members enjoying a sun-soaked kick and cake session."
First class money raising idea from former postie Eric. Encouraged by his incredible success walking a mile a day in March 2023 for the Alice Cross Centre and raising more than £2,500 in the process for Christmas Day lunches, ex-postie Eric Crocker has set himself a new challenge called Wheels for Meals to raise money for the meals delivery service. Apologies. In this will be his 90th birthday this year, and Eric's mission is to walk again to raise money for the Alice Centre. And he has a personal story, for he has recently come out of hospital following his recovery from a stroke, and he wants a new challenge to motivate his rehabilitation. "We were very concerned when we heard Eric had gone into hospital, as were all his friends," said Jackie O'Brien, manager of the Alice Centre. "When I saw him last week, I was relieved to see how well he looked. And in true Eric style, he was so positive, thinking of how he could help other people whilst helping himself." Eric's plan is to walk in Timoth's Triangles daily during March, starting at 11:30 on Friday, the 1st of March. "We are hoping the town will come out to wave him along and encourage him," said Jackie. "He's a well-known character in Timoth with a lot of friends and supporters. I know that everyone will be very happy to see him succeed in his challenge and watch his mobility improve as a result," she added. There's a lovely photograph of Eric. He's using a walker, and that's obviously how he's getting around. And there's a group of postmen and women who are standing around him before, because Eric obviously was a former postie.
And that brings us to the end of our recording for this week. As usual, if you have any comments or suggestions, you can contact us on 07376 147 374. Your readers this week were Lynn, Graham and Chris. Our producer is Mike, and the copying and dispatching is a team effort. So from all of us here in the studio, until next time, it's
goodbye.